Perhaps you heard it. The verb that is the axis of the second chapter of Ruth, one that is repeated over and over again. Did anybody catch it in this text? Anyone want to guess? Glean, glean. The word glean is used 12 times, just in this chapter. Gleaning is the action word that pushes this narrative along. Throughout history, artists have depicted Ruth gleaning in the fields as a sort of fashion-forward icon, there to lure in a husband with her beauty and finery. But I'm not convinced that as we study the words of today's chapter, that that's the Ruth we actually encounter. Gleaning is dangerous work. It's the work of the poor, mandated by the Torah as a way to protect those at the edge of the society from starvation by offering them the edge of the field. Gleaning was Israel's version of a social safety net. Gleaners had access to what was left behind in the fields, picking up the little bit of wheat or corn or barley that wasn't gathered by paid laborers. And this little bundle, whatever they could muster, it could be sold for a small profit or made into food. It was a way of livelihood, but it wasn't safe, and it never produced a life of stability. The word glean in Ruth is the same word that is used to describe the action of the people in Exodus when they are gathering manna from the ground. It's just enough for today. Just enough not to starve. It won't provide long-term relief or anything beyond today. Gleaning is for those who are barely getting by, those on the edge of mercy. This is the only work available to Ruth as she and Naomi drag themselves back to Bethlehem, ironically named the House of Bread. In chapter 2, the story's plot begins to revolve around these fields and around gleaning. Ruth goes out into the field to do what she can to help her and Naomi survive in this new land, unskilled with no male protectors. And she happens into the field of a man named Boaz, a kinsman of Naomi's dead husband. And when Boaz meets Ruth, he tells her to stick close to the women, and he orders the young men to leave Ruth alone. He says this twice, and it's coded language for the strong possibility that young women with no male attachments or heirs were frequently victims of sexual assault. They worked long and grueling hours, from early in the morning until now, without resting even for a moment, and they did so unprotected. Systems of routinized violence for field laborers are not a news story. In the fields where my grocery store produce is grown, countless low-wage and undocumented women face threats of sexualized violence. In some estimates, as many as 80% of all women in this line of work are victims of harassment and intimidation. Picking is dangerous for field workers. From the apple fields of Yakima Valley in Washington to the sweet potato fields here in eastern North Carolina, many workers spend 10 to 12 hour days in the sun, their eyes burned by pesticides. Workers report limited access to bathrooms and clean water. They're charged exorbitant prices for soda and water and transportation. And because these are often undocumented workers on temporary work visas, these people have little leverage in wage disputes. They become the victims of wage exploitation. They're vulnerable to human trafficking. They lack protections, isolation in field work, a drive for cheap food that creates a system of abuse invisible to those of us who do our weekly shopping in the supermarket. Marlene Perez was one of these exploited workers. In 2011, her boss attempted to extort her, withholding her wages and offering her higher pay in exchange for sexual favors. In a secluded area in tall tomato plants, her harasser brandished a pistol after she rejected his advances. Stories like Marlene's are everywhere. The Bible reminds us that the world is a dangerous place for women who are hungry. From the time of the Bible to the present, always the choice about whether to maintain one's bodily integrity or to risk starvation. There's nothing romantic or alluring about this story. It's gritty and it's rough. It's a story about risk and chance. And in the middle of it, God shows up. There are two extended narratives in the Bible where God never speaks directly to a protagonist, only two. Did you notice that? You never hear God's voice in the book of Ruth. But there's a line in Ruth 2 that helps us sort through what this might mean. The line is, "As it happened." As it happened, Ruth came to a field belonging to Boaz. As it happened, Ruth stuck with Naomi. As it happened, they decided to return to Bethlehem instead of staying in Moab. As it happened. A few weeks ago, we talked about some other call stories in the Bible, stories like those of God calling Abraham or Jacob or Moses. And in these stories, God's voice is audible. God shows up with some kind of sign, a ladder in the sky, or angels wrestling people to the ground, or a cloud enveloping a mountain. But for the women in Ruth, God's presence comes in the form of people. And I wonder if the difference between these stories is that women, these women, the lowest members of society, have nothing to give up. They have no wealth or possessions, nothing to fall back on if this business of following after God doesn't work out. They don't have to be convinced that there's something better out there to pick up and leave because there's nothing else. There's nowhere to go. There's only gleaning and scraping by. I suspect that the more we accumulate, the more there is to prop us up, the easier it is to convince ourselves that we got here on our own. Providence begins to look a lot like chance. We may not be searching around for God to save us because we think we've done quite a nice job on our own. Thank you very much. I thought about this when our book club was reading A Constellation of Vital Phenomena. It's a story about the intertwined lives of people in the aftermath of the Chechnya's multiple wars. And there was a line that made me think about Ruth. One of the characters, a devout Muslim, is talking with a secularist about religion. "I've always thought Marx's view on religion was the one thing he got right. Faith is a crutch," remarks the secularist. Ahmed, a Muslim, replies, "If you step on a landmine, the crutch becomes the leg." I wonder if this is why the New Testament, Jesus constantly finds himself surrounded by the poor, encouraging his followers to dispossession of what they have, warning them about lives of wealth. The followers of Jesus recognize him only by the sound of his voice, by the hope he offers not for wealth or stability, but just to give them a little bread, just to heal their wounds. I know this has been true in my life. At times of catastrophe and stripping away, when it becomes painfully clear that I have fooled myself into believing I am in charge of my own destiny, that is when I sense God's providence at work. As it happens, much of the time, God's voice for me has been other people. It looks like a way opening up or something disappearing. It looks like finding yourself someplace you didn't think you would be and then figuring out that God is up to something. As it happens, God is sometimes there because you wandered into a particular field on a particular day, not because a burning bush or a voice from a cloud of fire spoke to you. As it happens, sometimes grace is in the grain of things, working itself out in what we might sometimes call luck or chance. Marlon Perez, pressured by her boss in a tomato field, often feels like an updated telling of the Ruth story. As it happened, Marlene came across a group named Alianza Nacional de Campesinas. As it happened, they were discovered by a human rights lawyer who heard about what had happened to the young Guatemalan woman picking fields in the fields of Florida. As it happened, they took the case to court, and a federal district court judge ordered the farm owner to pay $3.5 million in damages to five farm workers, including Perez. As it happened, this sparked a nationwide movement to address sexual harassment and assault of farm workers. I suspect there is more grace around us than we realize. Love that is a gift we are given. A spreading of wings, as Boaz will say to Ruth, covering the naked and the hungry, there just below the surface, if only we are willing to clear away the things that obstruct our view of it. I suspect that in ways that are often unseen to us, you are, or maybe still are, grace to one another. As it happens, God may be working out grace for someone else through you. Amen.